Good evening.
Good evening.
We have a couple of new faces here tonight. Welcome. How did you hear about us? On Wednesday. Welcome. It's nice to see you. Let's do introductions around.
I'm Britt.
I'm Dan.
Sharon.
Nick.
Richard.
Wendy.
Matt.
Ron.
Francois.
And Angie. Were you there last week when I was there?
Mm-hmm.
There were a lot of people there. I didn't catch your names. So this is a little bit different from the Vipassana way. Zen is a little bit more precise about the body. Vipassana is a little bit more laid back about the body. And in Zen we try to hold a good posture, an upright posture, so that our breath can easily come and go. So it's more about the breath than anything else. And of course we have to adjust depending on what kind of body we have. I'm adjusting more and more as I get older, finding I can't bend where I used to. But it's still possible to stay upright, even if we have to lie down on the ground, to keep the spine straight and free up the breath. So the important thing is that the head is balanced so that the ears are even with the shoulders and the chin is tucked in, and already just those two things bring your back into alignment. You have a little curve in at your waist, very important, and you're not leaning on the chair, you're sitting forward so that the whole thing is open and breathing. And of course it means the heart is open also. And the mind opens up as we sit. We've been talking about the precepts. And some of you went home with the precept of no being angry, which is always everyone's favorite precept. How can we do this? Of course we get angry. It's our nature. And yet, in the realm of the precepts, as someone pointed out last week, they're all the same precept. They're all really about the same thing. And the same thing is about self and other. How can we, who feel so separate, manage with everything and everybody else? It seems like our suffering all comes from bumping up against the other. Whether it's stubbing our toe on a rock, or losing a job, or fighting with our mate, or being bitten by a dog. You can make an infinite list of all the ways that we bump up against the so-called other. And often our reaction to that is anger. How could they, how could you do that to me? So then there's you and me. And that's where Buddha said all our suffering comes from. There's another side of it. We can want more of you. That's also suffering. But it doesn't bring up anger so easily. but the you that turns out to be somehow an impediment to my grandiose ideas about myself and who I am and where I'm supposed to be and how it is, can very easily turn into an ugly situation if we don't understand who we are. It's our ignorance that gets us in trouble. I was reading in the sutras last week, preparing for the Wednesday talk, and found Buddha saying that the source of our suffering is lacking reverence and deference for the Dharma. But the Dharma means the truth. And the truth means everything. The actual situation as it is, not how we want it to be, but how it is. To actually be with each thing with reverence, and not just reverence, but deference. Coben talked about deference often. He said it's like two people trying to get through a very narrow door, like this door. It can't be done. So either you muscle your way through and be the first one through, or you say, please, after you. That sounds very nice when things are going well and we're friendly with everybody. But what if that's somebody you don't like? What if that's somebody who's being mean to you? Then how do you find that reverence? What is it based on? How do you find a way to have deference in a situation where you want to defend yourself? You can say it's a big part of our practice. We all want to be good. We all try so hard to be good. But what does that mean? So I'm curious how your experience was this week. If you have things to share, that would be very helpful. Francois.
A whole bunch of things that come to mind. I'll start with the negligible one first. People going through doors. For some reason, the preschool teacher to my children told me that she'd been teaching preschool for decades and decades, and always, it was always the boys who would get stuck going through the door three at a time. There was never once a girl or girls who got into that situation, but it was always boys. In terms of anger, boy, I've gotten myself in some real pickles. I'm in the process of going through an extraordinarily nasty divorce, and my plant just announced that they're shutting the doors, and so the entire universe is just falling on my head, and yet I feel that there can't be any room for anger right now, because that's just going to make it collapse on itself even further. It's a different feeling than what I'm usually used to having, and the deference, I'm still having a problem with the deference thing. It's it's easier to avoid than to have deference. Although it was, I won't go there. How can you have deference when you feel that somebody is attacking you with I'll answer that myself. I've brought a lot of this onto myself, and it's my original anger, and not being able to deal with it. That's brought a lot of this on, and I don't know how to say it other than that there can't be room for anger in the world. There's a room for it, and something that I need to fully understand.
There are many ways to work with anger, lots of them. And if we haven't had instruction, then it's very easy to fall into it. It's one of our easiest things. Anger and greed and ignorance, we just fall right in. So it takes a lot of attention and practice and some extra knowledge, real study about it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ritu? I think I've heard or read anger is fear. Fear is anger. So.
Well, that's one aspect of it for sure. It's how to take care of the fear, just blow up.
So I'm reporting back from my trip. I'm here, so that's good. I had a little trouble battling it. I went to Yosemite for like a minute to mind map though. And I didn't really know what I was doing, so I didn't really tell people I was going. It's probably a good thing. And it was just the most amazing experience. First of all, I didn't know it was so beautiful. So the deference was that you can do nothing but have deference for it. Just, you feel so small and there's no way that you're able to talk as I can. But anyway, but then, so I did the cables at the end, and I don't know if you know, probably everybody knew, but I thought everybody pumped up. You climb, there's a rock.
You climb,
basically, like, this is like for like 9 miles or something up. There's a rock, and you climb this rock, and anyway, I thought everybody did it, so I had to go. So, at the end, there are these the last 400 feet, there are these cables, and it's this big, you know, it's like this fear to climb the thing to the top, and I saw a lot of great people, and there were four of us, and two people didn't go. And so I talked the other person into going, come on, let's go. Well, I can't let you go alone. Come on, let's go. And I don't know what came over me. Like, it was this no fear. And, like, I'm climbing this thing, and then it's awful. Like, the cable, it's just awful. It's so dangerous. And it's really precarious. Some of them were broken. And, you know, so you have to hang them one side. And I don't even know how to talk about it, but it's like this feeling of no fear. And then when you don't feel fear, it just all opens up.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just like hanging there, and then I'm able to look around. I'm like, oh my God, thank you so much. And I was just thinking about the doorway, the last thing I was saying. I could talk more about it. I don't want to tell everyone, it was really delighted. The thing is like a doorway, because you can only fit really one person, but people are going up and down in the same thing. That's so precarious. And they're afraid, so it's like, it's just, yeah, that's the stress of it, really. And, but like, you can't be angry. Like, I was starting to get annoyed, but you just can't, and there's a lot of traffic coming down, and like, people just stop, you know, they're afraid, and they're just like, and then you just stopped, and everyone's just stopped, and that's when the accidents happen, too. But there is this whole way, like, okay, how are we gonna? How are we? I don't know. How you have to do it. You know, there's something else in the brain that you just take care of each other. And I met a lot of people. there's some people that are harnessed. So this guy had a harness and he's harnessed to a kid. Was there kids there? And so I was like, oh wow, you're gonna harness. Like, yeah, my wife made me do it. She said if I take her baby up here, I have to have the harness, you know. You just like, but so that was going. This is my last story. That was going up. They were going down. The dad and the kid took the harness. And then when we were going down, this woman was going up. And she was really afraid, but we're like, you know, we're waiting for her, and then she's coming up. She's the harness. And I'm like, oh, but your harness, you're fine. And but, and then she's like, well, I wasn't gonna come up, but when I was stopped at the bottom, and then this guy won me his harness. And I'm like, who won your harness? Like, there was this guy with a kid, and he said that his wife wouldn't let him go up because I'm like, I know him. We were having this conversation, hanging off this rock. But then when we were walking down, I saw them. I'm like, I saw your harness. And he's like, really? He's like, yes, you were there. So it's just like, it was really amazing. I'm really glad I did it. But.
So you put yourself in such a precarious situation that you can't afford to be angry. That's what you're saying.
Like, I didn't expect all that.
Yeah.
You know, I expected it to be like this challenge, this personal challenge, but I didn't expect to like connect with the universe and all the stuff that comes up here. Like, it just happens. It opens up.
So I suppose that's why what mountaineers are all about.
Yeah, I kind of get it. Yeah. You have to concentrate on what you're doing.
Yes, and there are no cables on the other mountains. So.
Well, we met these guys who came, they had climbed up the other side.
Oh, yeah.
Like rock climbed on the other side, and they were coming down, and they were more afraid of coming down on these cables than. He's like, this is kind of sketchy. I'm like, don't tell us that.
Oh, thank you, that's great.
Thank you all for listening. I just wanted to let everybody know, because I know a lot of people know I went.
Yes, Matt?
Yeah, you know, I years ago when I started meditating, I somehow got the idea that anger was a bad thing and I didn't want to feel angry. And I had this way of, I think, reinterpreting the message as, well, I'm just going to kind of ignore my feelings in a way and feel this wonderful meditation bliss. Isn't that great? And then I eventually got my training as a counselor. And did therapy and some very somatic therapies more recently where anger was really used to kind of bring the body back alive again to like be able to kind of protect yourself or assert yourself. And that really threw me into a confusion about what's this anger thing about? What am I, you know, is it good? Is it bad? I mean, it seems like it could be all sorts of things. But I had an incident on the way here where there's some people protesting healthcare. I just found myself upset inside, but I was able to very calmly have a dialogue, and I felt that my emotional reaction motivated me to engage. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking about that's what it's really about, not being like having enough of my fear get out of the way to where I can experience my emotions and use them for constructive engagement with the world.
Yes.
And so I think I'm going through this step-by-step process of figuring out how to have my feelings and not hide from them, but find a way to use them for, you know, for something that's not injurious per se. And I think it's hard for me to find the balance where I do feel angry of where do I go with this, you know, and what is this really, what's a way to deal with this that doesn't betray my human nature.
Yes, so. Yes. It doesn't mean, no, being angry doesn't mean that we never get angry. It just means we learn how to work with it and use it. It's a tremendous energy that, as I said last week, it's like you're reaching out over a chasm to reach somebody on the other side. Sometimes it feels like that. But if you work with it, you begin to realize that that chasm doesn't exist. And that if there's no real self, just this provisional self that we make up as we go along, and that everybody else is also making up their self as they go along, that we're all in the same soup. So there's no real chasm to try to cross. We're already there with each other.
So much of our emotional reactions come out of a false position we take within reality.
Yes, okay. That's the lesson of this. That's the teaching of it, exactly.
I kind of like having a self, though.
Oh, you can have a self. You have to be a self. We have to be. But it's very tenuous, and it's constantly changing. And if we hold on too tight, then we set ourselves up to be knocked down.
Yeah, I gotcha.
Right?
I got some really good practice on anger management this week because over Sunday dinner, somebody in my family got mad about something really pretty small and said something pretty mean to me and stomped off to the room. And I had to deal with some anger and resentment about that. Being a recovering angerholic, I've worked on it a lot.
Yeah, you're an expert by now.
There's a lot of different aspects of anger. But one thing I think if you, there's kind of what I call just the physical anger, which can come up. The people who write these books on emotional intelligence and so forth will tell you, well, this is the reptilian brain. There's some primitive layer in your brain where if you are threatened physically, you automatically react with this kind of adrenaline rush and you become fit. Physically and chemically primed to, survive. Maybe run or maybe fight. If you can't run, I think a lot of anger, people become really addicted to anger.
Yep.
And I would become addicted to this kind of chemical rush that happens when you have this primal response and all of these chemicals get released in your brain and it can feel good. Like getting a medication, but then the come down is pretty unpleasant. But the consequences, are even worse. But it's a very, on that level, it's very hard to. It may take a lot of practice to learn not to choose to go. You can kind of step back and pitch that shot. I think it has become angry. There's one instant between a time when that thing happens that sets you off, when you have a choice to say no. And you go off into anger and just go, let it go. Follow the precept. It's just selflessness, and I'm not going to react. And then anger, it can also be sometimes legitimate as you'll notice the but then when you go too far, it's all based on our own subjective experience. And two people are mad, who's right? One person thinks they're right, the other person thinks they're right, and they get mad at each other. But you don't feel it. I found this at work, not only working on my own bad habit of running correctly, but then thinking, well, what's another way to approach this situation? Like what Krista got mad at me. I was mad and saying, muttering things, but then I felt the way, person is young, and, I would probably, as bad as I was, when I was 23, and even though I'm hurt, maybe we can work it out. So I could be much better. We finally made up.
Some families never make up.
But I've done it so many times myself. We've all done it,
Yeah.
We can't put our ego aside or our preconceived. Oh gosh. I'm justified, I'm vindicated, I'm right, this is so right. But it's not, it's just have, you know, we're choosing to put this karma on. We can just say, we can just let it go and say, it doesn't matter. What's really important is not to be in a situation where there is some moral or ethical quality to it. We can use that constructively. It's not as simple.
It's not very simple at all. It requires a lot of patience always. Instead of going with the adrenaline rush, just to wait and see how things develop. Yes. Yeah. And it's hard to do because we're so perfect and we always know what the right thing is. What?
How, when you perceive somebody as attacking you, how do you maintain, compassion for that person while still defending yourself?
Sometimes you can't. Sometimes it takes some distance in time and space in order to be able to look back in a situation like yours. If you're right in the middle of it, you can see all the parties involved as doing the very best they can, which is certainly true, and you can be patient with them on that basis. But you also have to take care of yourself. So sorting out what's your thing and what's theirs is your work now. What's fair? And if it's not fair, if you end up on the wrong end of it somehow, then sometimes you just have to take it. Yeah. Yeah, I think we've all been in situations like that where we just have to accept that we lose sometimes. And it's a bummer. And looking back, you can see better how things were and perhaps find some forgiveness and some calm in it.
It's liberating also.
Yes.
To just let it go.
Yes, it is. It is.
The other aspect is kind of I call it karmic aspect of anger. This is something that may be inherited from the past or from the past.
Yes.
Past chain of causation. But I think that's another discussion. It's such a huge. I had to learn. I realized when I was young, in my 20s, I used to think that it happened in my family, you know. Personality traits that I probably copied from my mother sometimes, who was a very angry person. And she had good reasons to be angry sometimes. But, had some hard times. And working through all that and getting rid of it, but sometimes in my time.
They say if we can get rid of. Or not get rid of, if we can overcome our being driven by greed, anger, and ignorance, that the effect of it goes back 7 generations, which is what we're being affected by karmically, you could say. And they've done studies about that. You're absolutely right. So it may be a great grandfather also who was, and that continues psychically through generation after generation. And it also says if it stops those, that it goes forward seven generations also. So it's worth working on, basically.
Even the Irish and the Catholic fanatics, more or less, I don't know if they can ever quit fighting with the matrix, but they've had it more or less.
Yes, they have.
For quite a few years now.
Yeah.
And things are much settled down there, from what I hear.
Yeah, those two women did it. It was amazing.
Reconciliation.
Yeah. Well, next week we have the last prohibitory precept, which is no abusing the three treasures, which sounds very mysterious and strange. We have the three poisons, now we have the three treasures suddenly. Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. So it's Buddha in all Buddha aspects, from Shakyamuni Buddha to the Buddha nature and every single thing, to our own Buddha nature. The Dharma is the truth in every aspect, the actual situation in every moment, our own truth as we live it when we're totally honest. It's our truth, our reality is the Dharma. And Sangha is all, completely all. It's an old-fashioned word. It means the monastery and everybody in it. Or it means the community like this, a little group. But basically, it means everything and everybody. When we wrote the bylaws for Jikoji, we wrote, all beings are members of our Sangha. So we don't have membership. We don't have membership here either, for that very reason, because it creates a sense of separation. And that's what abusing is, creating a sense of separation where there is no separation. So Bodhidharma said, in the realm of the selfless Dharma, not giving rise to two views of Buddha and sentient beings is no abusing the three treasures. If you have to talk about sentient beings as a bunch of hopeless, foolish, dark, you have to see that Buddha is there too. Otherwise, you're really blind. Blind to your own situation. Corbin said, if truth doesn't take refuge in you, you cannot live. And that community includes all beings. And I've told this story many times, I'll tell it again, that when I was sitting one of my first retreats at Hidden Villa, I stepped outside and I'd been thinking about Sangha, trying to figure out what Sangha was. And I saw this beautiful flock of white birds flying across the sky. And they were all flying together. Ah, that's Sangha. Sangha. They were all flying together through the world. So when it was time to ask questions of the teacher, I very timidly went to Kobun and I said, what's Sangha, Kobun? And he said, sometimes it seems like a bottomless garbage bin. I was just, what does this mean? It isn't that everything is all lovey-dovey and perfect. It's that things are the way they are. And the closest we can get to accepting the way things are, the closer we are to the truth, our own truth and the truth of the universe. So you can see this is just tying the whole thing up in a beautiful way. So we can take this home for a week. Give a thought to all those 10 and see how they all interrelate. And we can talk about it some more next week. The week after, I want to talk about the 3 pure precepts. And then the week after that, I want to finish with the repentance and the refuges. So I'm doing it all mixed up. It's not in the order that we do this usually. I'm doing it kind of backward. But I think you'll feel why I did that. So it's after 8:00.